Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to 4.0 to Pro, the pickleball podcast that focuses on a single shot, tip, or strategy to improve your pickleball game with every single pocket-sized episode. Our goal is to make you better on the court every time you hear our voices. And now your hosts, 4.something Michael O'Neill, and USA Pickleball National Silver Medalist, Senior Pro Scott Fliegelman.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of 4.0 to Pro, your pocket-sized pickleball podcast where we teach you a single shot or strategy every single episode. I'm Michael O'Neill here in sunny Long Beach, California, joined by my good pal, Mr. Scott Fliegelman, there in Miami?
A little north. We're in Boca Raton, home of Susan Fliegelman. The Fliegelman clan has descended for spring break. The first part, got to play in the Miami indoor event, and then my family arrived Saturday afternoon, and we're here for a few days to enjoy some spring break action.
Awesome.
Well, not a whole lot of action. Not like college spring break action. But, you right, know, right. Hit the early bird.
Sure.
Maybe a little miniature golf.
Dinner's at 4:30.
We'll go to the beach. Yeah, spring very break good. With kids action.
Folks, if you'd like a carbon pickleball paddle, CRBN, carbonpickleball.com, you can use the promo code 402P for 10% off at checkout. Scott, you played in a tournament in a convention center, which I thought was very interesting.
And way better than I would have expected. As a sign of just how busy I've been with my day job, I had signed up for this tournament a few months ago, picked out some awesome partners, and not 3 weeks in advance, finally read through some of the materials and realized it's an indoor tournament. Hmm. And yours truly here being an indoor specialist, I was pretty stoked about that. And then it turned out to be 2 days of torrential rain in Miami Beach. And thankfully, we were indoors. Some of my background in other professions involved standing on my feet for days on end, hawking my wares at convention centers. And it was so cool to be whacking a plastic ball with a stick in a ginormous convention center. We had Pickleball United, pickleball court surface laid out over some really super smooth flooring, giant ceilings, and APP did an amazing job. It was a very cool tournament, and I really enjoyed. It was super fun to have a chance to play the tourney with Brian Levine and Susie LeBlanc, two good friends. We got to know each other really well last summer during a pickleball promotional tour in Israel. Got a chance to be alongside the Maccabi Games and promote pickleball. It's a big tennis, you know, country, and we left a bunch of paddles and balls and nets and hoping to see pickleball really take off over there. But Brian and Susie are really fun partners. We did well. We had a couple of good wins and hoping to have a chance to practice with them a little later this week as well.
Well, awesome. I hope you're not too sore, because today we're going to talk a bit about something we've mentioned multiple times on this show. The idea, Scott, is that for very specific scenarios, we want to just distill this into either choice A or choice B. Those are our only choices. And I think you and I, Scott, see a lot of people when they have a ball come to them, they get confused because they feel like they have 19 different shots to hit.
And we've mentioned the three and me lesson that I have a chance to do frequently at Boulder Pickleball. And we do an awful lot of drilling down on this topic. We worry about shot execution at other times, either in private lessons or go grab the ball machine and get your practice in. But let's focus on court positioning and shot selection. And the biggest mistakes as you've alluded to, are either players have one shot that they prefer or 12. And we really do want to boil that down to an A or a B. And let's read the clues that are present as the rally plays out and make the right selection. But even if you make the wrong selection, commit to it and execute the shot. The rally could still turn out in your favor.
So there's a chance you're listening to this and you are an outlier and you have a very unique special shot that is special to you and it's bread and butter. That's okay. You can keep that. That's fine. But for most of us, we'd like to stop making the unforced errors. We've talked about consistency on the show a number of times. Having an A-B choice for a shot is what fosters consistency. Scott, why don't we start on the service side first, and we will work our way through our transition zone to the non-volley zone, and we'll see how far we get. If we're still good on time, then we'll be able to do the other side as well. How's that sound?
It sounds good, and we may as well start with the easiest one. Again, coming into pickleball from tennis, I was always shocked how urgent people seem to move from rally to rally, whereas in tennis, it's probably a little bit too much time in between points. But I do encourage my students to take an extra 3 or 4 seconds, at least, in between service points, especially to give some thought to my pre-serve alignment and visualization. And part of the visualization is what type of serve, what type of tactics am I going to use here in order to achieve my primary objective as a server, which is to delay the forward progress of the returner and take pressure off of my third shot. So I think at least an A and a B here tactically are, I want a high and deep topspin serve to get them on their back foot. The topspin gives me the confidence to aim deep, knowing that the physics presented will help that ball dive. If I happen to miss, missing by 2 inches long is acceptable with this approach. Or if I'm only limited to an A and a B here, and I know, Michael, you'll probably offer a C, but that's okay because we have time. Low and fast, give me the heater, but let's try and get that ball deep as well. Again, these are tactics designed to achieve our primary objective as servers, which is to take pressure off our third shot.
Well, it's worth noting, too, that as we discuss these, where the AB thing really takes hold is when things get faster. Pre-serve, you have plenty of time to think about what you're going to do. In the middle of a firefight or a foot off the transition zone, you don't. And that's where this AB thing really comes into play, is that you don't have time to think through 7 different options. I don't actually have a third for a serve, Scott. You can certainly change your location, depending on if you're on the odd or the even side. You can decide to drive at someone's backhand or forehand or whatever. But as you mentioned, they both got to be deep. That's the really important part. And if you want to do a nice hard drive or a lob, that is a great AB to start with. The next ball, though, I think is pretty interesting. And this is where the pathways can start diverging a little bit. So let's assume first, Scott, that their return was high, deep, and down the middle. What is our AB?
So we've got a high, deep, and down the middle return. Good for those guys. Before we even get to AB, we've got to call it. I'm really, really big on, and the yours on the high, deep, and down the middle return. So we've clarified that. And as I've shared on this show with you guys before, I've just learned everything I need to know about what style of third I'm going to hit by looking at the trajectory of this return. So let's say I've said mine, and I'm going to play it. I'm now wagering, because of the height and the depth of the return, that both of my opponents are squarely at the non-volley zone. And I no longer have a great opportunity to hit my preferred shot, my option A shot, which is a hybrid drive drop, new school style third that lands at their feet. Now I've wagered there aren't any feet in the transition area. This is where I go to a traditional lofted third shot drop. And I'm going to do that most of the time cross court. Since there aren't any feet available in the transition area, I'll leverage the geometric benefits of cross court, go over the low part of the net into an area of the kitchen that there's 50% more landing area than there is straight away. So that's how I'm going to look at the decision-making process on a high, deep, and down the middle return.
Now, is there a B to this one for you, or because they've hit it so well, there's no B? So I might look at that nice fat ball that's waist high and try to kick a field goal with it and try to split the two people sitting at the non-volley zone across from me and hope for a short mid-transition zone fifth shot. That's what I would probably do in that case if I wasn't feeling buttery about my third drops. Would that be considered the B in this, or is that just me being an outlier?
Let's make you an outlier, and I'll offer my B on the high, deep, and down the middle, is if it is particularly deep, particularly spinny, particularly windy day, and I'm not having a great day with my drop shots, I may then jump to B, which is a conservative line drive with the goal of getting a little bit better drop opportunity on the fifth shot. I don't want to dump my traditional drop shot into the net or pop it up. I credit the with an impactful return of serve, and I jump to option B, which is I'm just going to live for one more shot. Here is your lukewarm line drive. Let's see what you can do. My partner and I are going to stay back, and we're going to try again on the fifth.
Okay, now that return, Scott, instead of being high, deep, and down the middle, is short. Let's assume it's still middle-ish and that left side player can get a forehand on it. It's not directly to your partner. Let's say it's a nice short ball, three quarters of the way into the transition zone. And now I have an easier drop if I want it. That's probably A. Or for someone like me, I might tee off on that ball if it's waist high. And I know that you're quick and you've got a good shake and bake in your back pocket. That might be something we discuss, but they've made the mistake of having a short ball. So now let's take advantage of it and see if we can get some offense going.
I'm similar. If I get a short, unimpactful return of serve, I would say my A is, against the level of play I'm accustomed to, is I'm going to jump right to a drop to the left side player's low backhand, neutralize the rally, and get up there and engage in a four-person ritual kitchen exchange. That's just my preference. B, I'll tee off at the closest player to me, the player straight ahead, look for a shake and bake, or even to finish the job myself. That sequentially, that's the order I'm going to approach it in.
So let's assume, Scott, that we've done that. You've now teed off on that close player that's right there at the net. They're waiting for you, but they've handled it with aplomb. They have no problem handling your hard shot. This is where I think a ton of people get in trouble, is that they keep firing. They get a couple feet into the transition zone, ball comes back at them, and they just keep firing and firing and firing until it's either in the net, in the fence, or back at their feet somewhere that they can't handle it at all. I think, and you can talk me out of this, I think there's only an A for a couple of shots until you can work your way into the non-volley zone. I think the only way to get out of this is to drop it into the non-volley zone and live to fight another day, take another step into the transition zone, right or wrong.
I agree. And let's try to simplify it as best we can. For a fifth, a seventh, a ninth, an 11th, if I'm in the transition zone, the yellow zone, I've not yet with my partner arrived at the non-volley zone. A, if the ball bounces, I agree with you. There is but one shot, a cross-court cornhole style soft ball designed to land in the kitchen, or at least get them to hit up so that my partner and I can move forward and neutralize the rally. B, for me, if my footwork is crisp and I anticipate a little bit of loft on their fourth or their sixth or their eighth, if I can get it out of the air, then I can stay on the gas. I could choose to drop out of the air, but if I really want to attack, I've got to get that ball out of the air. And again, I'm going to go at the player closest to me straight ahead who doesn't have the time for it. So for me, A, it bounces, only one shot, cross-court cornhole style ball designed to land in the kitchen, B, out of the air, and rip it at the player directly in front of me.
What's interesting about this is it's almost like hopscotch, because we've got like A, B, A, B, A, 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 and then we get back into A, B again, maybe a foot or two from the non-volley zone. Because once you get a foot or two from the non-volley zone, you've earned your way up. Let's say you still haven't managed to hit this perfect drop and they can get a hold of it. Well, now you're close enough to be in a firefight and you can then decide, do I want to keep going with this? Is A my... let's go, baby. I'm in this firefight. Or B, is it, let me get established and hit a drop and get into our four-person ritual kitchen exchange. So it sort of splits off there a little bit, doesn't it?
I think so. And as I've shared with you guys in the past, I'd love to try to stay on the gas. I want my default to attack, to counterattack, to provide offense. So that's going to be my plan. I'm going to shift to B when one of the following is present. I'm off balance. I don't have my footwork. I don't have the stable base that Michael talks about underneath me. And the ball gets in on me. I don't feel like I can get it out in front, or I can't get it high. The ball's gotten too low. That's when I'm going to shift to B, which is I'm going to open my paddle face. I'm going to soften my hands, soften my grip, and I'm going to reset that ball, leveraging the poor bounce of the ball in the non-volley zone so as not to pop up, to get the ball to bounce low and to neutralize the rally.
So now we've dropped the ball. We are now, Scott, officially in the Fliegelman-branded four-person ritual kitchen exchange. Can you talk a little bit about your mindset while you're in the middle of this dink rally in terms of this AB, like where you might go A, where you might go B?
A for me is pretty simple. I'm generally looking for the corners as much as possible. B being the left foot of the right side player is not as frequent. It comes with some risks. And a lot of those risks has to do with the height and length and athleticism of the left side player, because I'm flirting with their forehand in the middle there. But if I can get that ball to bounce a little bit toward their partner's side, I'm just really trying to tempt a low backhand, hopefully a pop-up, or maybe bring that left side player so far over to the middle that I can get back on my plan A, which is the corner. If I can get them off balance while moving back out to the corner, that's where I might get a pop-up or threaten an Ernie or both.
Well, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here, Scott, like I love to do here on this show. I'm going to paint a few different scenarios within the context of a dinking rally, and I'd like you to share your A, B, or if there's only an A, what is it? We're both on the left-hand side, so we're backhand to backhand dinking. You have really caught me out. You've hit a lovely low dink that's to the outside. You hit the corner, you clip it. It's not wide enough for me to ATP, but I am definitely out of position. What is my AB?
All right, Michael, in this scenario that you're describing, I feel like there is but one shot. So let's just go. Option A is what I like to call a flop wedge, a lofted ball that lands softly to the player directly in front of you, but it's got to be inside the net standard far enough that their Ernie is not available. So it's going to land soft, somewhat shallow. I prefer this one versus trying to get that ball back cross court because you're not balanced. And I'm concerned about distance control on that shot. That one tends to fly a little bit too far, turns into a pop-up, you're out of position and lose the rally.
Yeah, this is a really tough one. I've been in the position a number of times, obviously, as have we all. That's the only shot. It was a trick question, Scott. There was only an A. We're both on the right side now, and we're in a dinking rally, and you leave one a little bit higher than you want to. And I'm on my right side, so that means I have access to my 40-plus years of paddle and tennis sports flicky forehand available to me, which I can deploy inside out or inside in or pretty much anywhere I want, and I can typically speed up from pretty low on the court. So I have a choice now. I can roll that ball back to you. That could be an A. And B, I could speed up and I could do it from a somewhat low spot. That is, to me, an AB. This is where you call lowering the X. It depends on where the X is to you, meaning how low are you typically able to speed up a ball without hitting it into the net or hitting it long. I'm certainly better at doing that on my forehand side than I am on my backhand side, which I think is similar for a lot of people, Scott. So my AB would be a little different for this on the right-hand side than it would be on the left-hand side. Now, I've been developing this two-handed backhand, and conceivably, I could stretch and get a two-e and get that nice little backhand roll, but I don't know that I would. I think I would probably still stay within the confines of my capabilities, and that might also just be an A. Or do I bounce it and maybe go for a speed up? Like, who knows? So if we're right to right, my AB is going to be, yeah, I'm either going to dink it back to you with like a nice dink roll, or I'm going to try to do something with it. I'm going to try to get it out of the air and do something with it. But on the other side, you might have a different opinion, or you might have a different opinion on what I just said.
So my suggestion in trying to decide whether A, to stay conservative, patient, and dinking this ball back cross court, or B, find it instigatable and instigate at the player directly in front of you, comes back to your healthy assessment of how you guys are going to win this match. If you've decided you're better dinkers than your opponents, then I'm leaning A, roll the ball back, minimize the risk, because there's more risk with instigating than there is with dinking the ball back. Get it out of the air, steal a little time and comfort, roll the ball back, and let's go back to your original intention. Is if we're able to minimize the risk and dink the ball back at them one more time, we can elicit a mistake. They dump it in the net, they hit it wide, they pop it up. Great, we didn't have to run the risk of instigating a ball 18 inches off the ground. Or you've decided you're playing against Ben and Colin, and they're not going to miss a dink. Now the X, the height above the ground at which we're going to instigate, gets lower and lower and lower. And now you've got that ball on the right side, on your forehand. It's 18 inches off the ground. I think you're going to want to select an instigator. I think you're going to want to put that ball on the shoulder of the opponent directly across from you. If you've got some advanced knowledge that they're going to go cross court with it, is really great to know. That minimizes the risk. But that's where I think you're going to make the decision, is it's back to, are we just better dinkers than these guys? Then let's just keep dinking. Are they better dinkers than us and probably better across the board? Then I'm going to need to bring the fight to them and instigate a ball that's 18 inches off the ground. We recently talked about a tournament that you and I played together, and we shared that with you guys. And one of the challenges was you were telling me that you were doing a good job extending the rally, keeping the ball going, but you had limited touches. Your opponents were focused on putting the ball on your partner's paddle. And that's where I was encouraging you. That's not the time to extend the rally. When you get one or two touches per rally, you're going to have to maximize those. So let's resist the temptation to extend the rally and let's go ahead and instigate. And hopefully that's going to work out in our favor.
Yeah, that was a really crazy piece of advice, Scott, that was counter to everything I'd thought of. I always talk about consistency and trying to stay in the rally and don't make these blah, blah, blah. It was almost like, maybe you should take more chances because you're not getting a chance to touch the ball much. You might as well try to do something with it when you can. And I thought, well, that's really interesting, because I was thinking too conservatively on the court, and I should have been thinking you could potentially have done X or Y with this, and you didn't, because you were trying to extend the rally, and extending the rally didn't make any sense because it just gave them more opportunities to hit to my partner. And I totally got it when you said it, but it was something I'd never really thought of before. It was really a cool piece of advice. Scott, as I thought, I knew this topic might be a little richer than we had originally conceived. And we've really just managed to get our way from the service line to the non-volley zone and gotten into a four-person ritual kitchen exchange. But we haven't touched on anything that happens in the return game yet. So I think what we'll do is we will part B this, pun intended, on the next episode. So we'll have this be a bit of a two-parter, and we'll do returning serve and what to do from that standpoint, from now what would be considered the offensive standpoint as an AB. And we'll talk about some kind of outlier things like overheads and, you know, different stuff like that. So does it sound good?
It sounds good.
All right, guys. Thank you so much, as always, for listening to the show. We appreciate you very much. I am very excited to get on a pickleball court today, as I've not been on one in quite some time. And you guys go out, have some fun. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to 4.0 to Pro. For more tips, find us on Instagram at 4.0 to Pro. If you have a pickleball question, submit it at picklehelp.com. Now, get out there and dominate. But don't forget to have fun.